Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, Jeff Parles, ESPN Las Vegas, will join us. We'll do NFL draft, NBA playoffs, and yes, we will get to his Mets. We're recording this before either their 11-game losing streak is snapped or extended to 12 games. Hard to believe anybody lose 12 games in a row, but especially a team. I mean, you could pick apart the roster and say, I don't like this move or that move. 12-game losing streak for the Mets would be pretty tough, but we're recording this before the games. And you know, usually, and I'll talk some NBA playoffs, NFL draft, do everything with Jeff, and I'll do a little bit of everything to start here. Now, I like to do the reaction, wait till the games end, do the reaction. The problem is, I mean, like Monday night, Denver, Minnesota, if you're on the East Coast, I mean, it starts at 11 o'clock and that game's over at 1:30 in the morning. It's just to be able to wait and get this back up and get this up, it's just, you know, it's not worth it. So just preview the games, talk draft, and try to do as much reaction as possible. But again, when these games end at 1:30 in the morning, it's just, it's, you know, it's not realistic to stay up, wait, react to it, and then go to the next game. So recording this before, I should say, before these games end Tuesday night, the early games, but I was going to say, you know what, this is a situation where I don't even need to wait for the early slate of games to end because it's Boston, Philly, it's Spurs and Blazers. Home teams are both big favorites, but the dogs are very live in these games so far. So maybe we'll get some upset here. Philly looks poised for an upset and Portland is hanging in there. So that's really been the theme. Monday, the playoffs got a lot better with, you know, it looked like, you know, it was all chalk all weekend except for Detroit and Orlando, which I'll get to. But Monday, it looked like more of the same. Cavs are just going to roll the Raptors. And I think I called that one a sweep beforehand. And that looks like a sweep. Knicks were up big on the Hawks. And then you had Denver later on. Well, the Hawks, funny thing happened on the way to an 0-2 deficit. Knicks absolutely collapsed. And Minnesota, who was down 19, I think it was 44-25, they came back and win. So the playoffs got a little juice. Series on Wednesday, or the game's on Wednesday. OKC, Phoenix, just a total waste of time. They shouldn't even play the rest of the series. OKC length, 17.5. But the game that interests me, the series that fascinates me, and it really is interesting, Detroit in Orlando, Detroit laying 8.5, total 218.5. I don't know if I could take the points with Orlando. The trend is so strong where the team losing game one at home, rebounds and wins game two and wins convincingly so often that I don't know that I could take the 8.5. But I said it before this round started. I said it Sunday night in the little recap show to talk about it on Monday. That's a 1-8 series. The one doesn't look like a one. The eight doesn't look like an eight. And I mentioned, you know, Orlando before the season, their win total is 51.5. Detroit was 45.5. That didn't feel like an upset on Sunday. It really didn't. In Orlando right now, 45-1 to win the East. If they can win this series, and I do think they can win this series, the Cavs in the next round, that's not like the tallest task. I think there's value in Orlando at 45-1. You just look at how Detroit plays. It's all about effort. Well, in the playoffs, everybody plays hard. So that strength is mitigated. They win with defense and toughness and rebounding and just, again, a lot of effort stuff. You can't bully Orlando, though. Orlando's enormous. Wagner and Banchero. Orlando's got a really big team. I don't like this matchup for Detroit. I mean, the way the playoffs usually go, the team that's down 0-1 at home comes out desperate. They have a ton of energy, and you just can't fake that desperation, and they often win by, you know, 20-plus and just win going away. And that's very possible on Wednesday, but it would be Orlando for nothing or nothing for me. And I do think Orlando, but I would not be surprised if they won the game. I wouldn't be surprised if they lost by 20. I wouldn't be surprised if they won the game because I just think, and even if Detroit wins, but it's close, I'd be worried about Detroit that this is just a bad matchup. And if you look at it this way, if you're Orlando, you win one of the next three and two of them are at home. You're 2-2, and it's all of a sudden it's a best of three where anything could happen. But I think Orlando, like I said, is very live, very dangerous at 45-1 to win the East. I don't think that's a bad bet. I would not be surprised if nothing else, this is a long series. And if you're Orlando, I know if you get up 2-0, it's not a complete death blow, but if you're up 2-0 going back home, it is complete panic time for Detroit. So fascinated to see this game on Wednesday. Could care less about, okay, do you want to lay it with OKC? Is a better spot for Phoenix. They're a little more, you know, settled in, rested there a couple days. We saw it last year where Memphis, same situation, came in off the play-in, played that Sunday afternoon against OKC and lost the game by like 56 points. In game two, they were much more competitive. Maybe you see a scenario like that this time around, but OKC just has so many answers to throw at Booker that I'm not taking it. I'm not laying it. So no need to talk about it. I'd be surprised if OKC dropped the game, which is pretty much consensus. If I had to bet anything here, it would be Phoenix team total under 98.5. I just don't know that they can score that much in this series. OKC just has a lot of answers defensively. The one prop I would like in Orlando, Jalen Duren, over 17.5 points. He did nothing. He did absolutely nothing in the first game. Like four shot attempts. Usually when a player of his ilk, and he's not a superstar, but he made the all-star team, he's going to be like an all-NBA guy, there's going to be an emphasis, hey, get this guy the ball, get him some shots. I would expect the volume, the opportunity to be there for Duren. Over 17.5 to me is a play just because I do think the volume will be there. But that's a fascinating game. Orlando going for a commanding 2-0 lead heading back home. I'm really excited for this game. I think it's a very dangerous spot for Detroit in a very dangerous series. And then you get Knicks in Atlanta on Thursday. That series has some juice. That's looking like a longer series. What an awful loss that was for the Knicks. And even if the Knicks win, they're trapped in what they are. They're just second round-ish type of team. Last year, they got a little further. Maybe this year, they get to the second round. They're about a second round team in a weak East, by the way. And you really just do the autopsy of what happened, what went wrong. To me, it goes back to the Bridges trade, where a couple summers ago, they gave up five first rounders. I remember doing this podcast saying, man, guy's never made an all-star team. Guy will probably never make an all-star team. And you're giving up five first rounders. I know he's a good player. I know he upgrades your team, but he is not the missing piece between you and a title team. And that takes you out of realistic conversations for Giannis, because that's five more first rounders you could have thrown at Milwaukee. That's five first rounders you could have thrown at any number of legitimate superstars. And to me, Bridges used to be an elite role player. Now he's just a role player. And Brown is not a great coach. That made no decision to move on from Thibodeau. I had no problem getting rid of Thibodeau. I thought that was harsh. But to get rid of Thibodeau to go to Mike Brown absolutely made no sense whatsoever. They'll probably figure out a way to win this series in like six or seven games. I don't think they're winning three in a row here to win it in five. Probably not going to win both in Atlanta. You're probably looking at a split here, and it's 2-2. Headed back to New York for game five, and that would be a good scenario right now. If you're the Knicks, you just take a split, turn it into a best two out of three with five at home and with seven at home. But that's looking like a longer series. And then Denver, Minnesota. I would have a little concern about Denver. They just stink defensively. They have a lot of places to attack defensively. They're just not a great defense. And I think was it McDaniel on Minnesota who said after the game, he goes, we go after their bad defenders. And they're all bad defenders. And he's not wrong. Quickly on the draft, and I'll do a lot of draft with Jeff Parles here coming up in a minute. I would love to tell you, hey, bet this, this, and this for the draft. I have no idea where these players are going. No idea. I did a column for Fox. I wrote it Tuesday morning. Bailey was plus 275. And honestly, I had trouble coming up with three or four picks for the column. But Bailey was plus 275. I recommended that as a play. And by the time the column printed, he was odds on. So that's the other thing too with content. It's just hard from a content perspective to talk about this stuff, because by the time you listen to this, the odds drastically change in your favor or against your favor, and it's just trying to keep up with the market, your head's going to spin. Bailey and Reese from Ohio State, Bailey's from Texas Tech. It's the Michael Scott, The Office, the snip, snap meme, where they just keep going back and forth. Reese was a big favorite, then Bailey. Then Reese was a big favorite again, then Bailey. So who knows? Maybe Reese will be minus 700 the day of the draft. Maybe Bailey will be minus 700. Maybe we'll be sitting right where we are. I think it's a coin flip. That's why I recommended the plus 275. Where it's priced as I'm doing this, where Bailey is a small favorite and Reese is like around even money, I think that's about right. I think it's a coin flip and nobody seems to know. I mean, that would be my honest answer, is that Bailey, that, maybe 51-49 or 55-45 Bailey if I had to guess. But to me, it's pretty much a coin flip and nobody seems to know. The Jets seem to be either confused or conflicted or tight-lipped or all of the above. So I'm not sure about that. And then that obviously creates a domino effect. And keep that in mind. If you're betting all of these things, they're all connected. They're all correlated. And if one goes wrong, they could all go wrong and you could have a disaster of an evening. And the draft's a fun event. You want to make some money if you can, but you also want to enjoy it. And you don't want to set yourself up for disaster. But 3 depends on 2. And then from there, maybe Love 4. Giants at 5, taking Love or Love to the 5th pick, not specifically the Giants, but Love to go 5, and the Giants do have the 5th pick. That got a lot of buzz, a lot of action in the market where he went from, you know, 7 or 8 to 1 down to like 3 to 1 within a couple hours. So, you know, that's another scenario. Is that on draft day, is that, you know, is Love even money to go 5 or is he 10 to 1 and that's our 15 to 1? So last year, McMillan just out of nowhere, hours before the draft, he steamed to big odds on favorite to go to the Panthers at 8. And what do you know? That ended up being correct. So usually the late move is pretty indicative, but it's a big guessing game at this point. And as much fun as it is to talk about, fun as it is to bet, I don't feel like I have a ton of great info to pass along, and just feels harder and harder to bet on a yearly basis. The one I feel pretty good about, you could still get McCoy, the Tennessee corner, over 28.5. No in the first round, so over 32.5. The no is plus money. His medicals are pretty bad. He missed 2025 with a torn ACL. And then the rumors are now, or the whispers are now, that he's going to possibly need another surgery to clean up some knee cartilage. It's like at some point, he's a really talented player, but at some point, especially as a corner, if you're dealing with knee issues, a torn ACL, and now knee cartilage, that's a position that is so dependent on speed and athleticism and quickness. That's not a good recipe for a corner with this many medical red flags. So he might be a guy that slips into the second round. And hey, if he's healthy and he can be what he's capable of physically, yeah, it's a steal, but I'm not sure he goes in the first round. So an over him on him would be one I would look at. You know, from there, Tate's the favorite to go 6th pick, the wide receiver. It's not easy. It doesn't feel like there's a ton of concrete info here. And that's the thing. When info becomes concrete enough where you feel good about it, well, the market reacts, and the market reacts pretty quickly. So tough. It's become very tough to bet, even though it's a fun day, one of the best days of the year. When you consider you have the NFL draft, which in and of itself, even though it's a weaker draft, it's such a fun day. You throw in the fact that you've got NBA playoff games, NHL playoff games, and Major League Baseball. To me, the draft is a top 3 or 4 day of the year. I always, you know, come up with these days. AFC, NFC title game, the conference title games in football is one of them. The first couple days of the NCAA tournament, I guess, is 2 of them. And it depends what sports you like. But to me, the NFL draft is one of those days for all of those reasons. But coming up next, we'll see what Jeff Parles thinks. We'll see if he has a better feel for the draft. Get his thoughts. NBA playoffs, Major League Baseball. That is next. This Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we're back. Should Have Bet More podcast. ESPN Las Vegas is where you catch him. And he joins us now once again. It is Jeff Parles, one of our favorites. Jeff, what's going on? Plenty to discuss, my friend. How are you?
It's been an interesting 2 weeks, my friend.
We'll get to everything. We'll get to everything. I'll start with, by the time people listen to this, the draft will be a day away. I think of the Michael Scott snip, snap, snip, sap gif with regards to the second pick. It's Reese, then it's Bailey. If you follow the betting market, you're getting dizzy. The latest, at least as we're recording this, is Bailey is now once again for like the third time flipped to the favorite, maybe the second time. But plenty of action, plenty of back and forth. Where do you stand right now and who you think it will be?
All right, let's start with this. If I were the Jets, I would take David Bailey. If I were the Jets, I would take David Bailey. I don't think that if we're looking at like at these two players' profiles, Arvell Reese is unbelievably talented. But he has no position, Will. He's no position. And I know that a lot of people have convinced themselves that he's going to turn into this elite pass rusher. I'm not fully convinced of that. And also, I think you have to keep in mind also now, Aaron Glenn very possibly is only going to be there, could very possibly only be there 6 weeks this year if the Jets get off to a horrible start. He could very easily be fired after this year. And I don't know if you want to base your long-term plans off of the coaching staff you currently have, but this coaching staff is going to have no idea how to coach Arvell Reese, have no clue how to coach him. And David Bailey, despite the fact that there has been, and this will sound strong, but I obviously, since the Jets are my team and I'm very close to the Jet media ecosystem, there have been a lot of Jet podcasts that have really wanted Arvell Reese. And this has been a pretty vicious smear attack against David Bailey. which doesn't make any sense to me. Because if you watch Texas Tech last year, yeah, David Bailey wasn't great against the run. I get that. But when you know you have Joey Rodriguez on the second level and those monsters in the middle that Texas Tech defense had, you really think David Bailey's going to go full bore? Like, he's a 20-year-old college kid, David. Or David Bailey is. So, like, of course, Will, the effort is sometimes going to be lacking. He's not going to look as good. And look, I know that's not great because you have motor questions, but I don't have motor questions with David Bailey. Because guess what? He was the best player in the game against Oregon in the Orange Bowl. Like, he was the best player on both teams. And remember, if you remember that game, Texas Tech's offense was so deplorably bad that it didn't matter that Texas Tech's defense essentially stood on its head for three quarters until they just couldn't stand on their head anymore. So I would take David Bailey. I have no idea what the Jets are going to do. About 24 hours ago, I was on with our good friend Gilly. I think people know who young Gilly is. But I told him I think Arvell Reese is going to be the pick because all the people that are familiar with the Jets, like the close beat writers, are convinced that Reese is going to be the pick. But all the national guys are convinced it's going to be David Bailey. So I have no clue. I would not bet it unless this is the one circumstance that I would bet it. If you have a good plus number in your pocket on David Bailey right now, I wouldn't mind coming back with a little bit on Arvell Reese at a plus price. Or vice versa, if you laid a price with Reese and Bailey becomes an underdog again, then I'd consider doing it that way. I would make sure that I'd find a way to win on this regardless, Will. Because it's definitely, there's no chance it's not going to be either of those guys. Like, it's going to be Reese, it's going to be or Bailey. If you put gun to my head, I would say it's probably still going to be Reese, but I would pick David Bailey if I was running the Jets.
How do you see the rest of the top five playing out? Anything you have conviction on? Where do you think Love goes? I'll give you the floor, whatever direction you want to take it.
I have no conviction on anything other than Fernando Mendoza will be the first pick, Will.
I'm with you.
I know that's not what you're really looking for, but.
No, I completely agree.
Here's the better question, I think. Do we think Arizona's going to hold on to the pick at three? Because I think that's going to tell a lot of what's going to happen in the top, really the whole top 10, Will, because if Arizona holds on to the pick, they're likely going to take, it's too early to take Ty Simpson. David Bailey was the betting favorite this morning before the numbers moved around on to be the third overall pick. I think they would take Arvell Reese if he's there at three. I'm not sure that's the right pick, but I think that would be the way that they would go. Or if obviously if the Jets take Reese, they're gonna take Bailey. Like, I think they'll take one of the two pass rushers. I think Tennessee is gonna take Jeremiah Love, but I don't know if that's the right idea. Like, if you're the Titans, a running back doesn't make much sense for how far away that roster is, right? Like, you still need to fill a lot of defensive needs. I forget with the report the other day that the Titans really wanted to sign an interior linebacker this offseason and they just couldn't get any. And Saleh, I know, loves having high-end linebackers. Just look at Saleh's history, right? Like, the linebackers in San Francisco has always been good. When he's at the Jets, like, Quincy Williams went from a nothing to an all-pro under Saleh, like, and then went back to a nothing after Saleh got fired. So, like, Sonny Styles makes sense there too, right? But do you really want to take a linebacker at number four? So very, very difficult in the top five. The only thing that I feel confident, I told Gil this as well on ANG on Monday, I am fully convinced Caleb Downs is the best player in this draft. Fully convinced of that. The only issue is these teams have convinced themselves that safety is not a premium position. But I think Caleb Downs is the best safety that's been been a draft prospect since Ed Reed. So, like, we're talking 25 years ago at this point, and obviously Ed Reed fell into the mid-20s and then was the best safety for him and Polamalu, the two best safeties for 20 years. So I think whoever ends up with Caleb Downs is going to get the best player in this draft, and I'm fascinated also to see what the Giants do with their two top 10 picks.
Anything else draft-wise before we move on?
I think you should take a little flyer on Ty Simpson to go to the Steelers. There are big prices out there, And Will,
what are big prices? I haven't seen. I don't have that much of this stuff in Connecticut, and I gotta look
offshore. I saw 14 this morning at DK.
Oh, that's a good price.
I saw 14. Now, look, I don't think he'll go there. I still think he's going to go to Arizona. But, Will, for a guy who's not even certain to go in the first round, like, Arizona shouldn't be that huge of a favorite, right?
Like, I would agree.
Even though he probably is an Arizona Cardinal when it's all said and done. Steelers need a quarterback. I mean, Rodgers is holding them hostage again. So, like, I think that would make sense if you're the Steelers. Again, I would not take Ty Simpson in round one. I don't think he's any good. I don't even think I'd take him in round two. But if you're the Steelers, I mean, they probably will think about it. So I think that's a reasonable price. When it's all said and done, I think he ends up in Arizona. But you shouldn't be having a layover $2 on a guy who very well may not go until, like, pick 36.
Yeah, the other movement, the big one today, was Love to go five or Love to go to the Giants. It was more Love to go five. I saw plus 750, and then it moved down all the way to, like, plus 250 now, and maybe that has updated since. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I'll ask you this. Why does that make sense for the Giants to do that? Like, they have so many needs on their team still. And I know Scataboo could be a flash in the pan. He's coming off a significant injury, but you really want to take a running back at five? When you have all these high-end defensive players that could really, like, I don't think the Giants are that far off, but they really need to build that defense if they're going to really be a threat to potentially push for a playoff spot in a very weak NFC East this year.
I guess the case would be you got a young quarterback. He gets hit a lot. Let's take some of the pressure off from where you could just hand off the ball and be in second and six, second and five. You could throw him the ball. And it's just he's so far, according to your rankings, the best player that you just kind of ignore the positional need and you go with best player and you say, you know what, it's a weaker draft. Everyone killed Gibbs. I know Genty didn't work out at least yet, but everyone killed the Lions for taking Gibbs, and Gibbs looks like he's, you know, borderline Hall of Fame player. That would be the case for it.
You know, I would also say, and I think Genty will be fine, by the way, with the Raiders.
Yeah, I do too.
I just think that offensive line was such a disaster. And Genty still had over 1,000 total yards last year in a year that wasn't particularly good. And now they're actually, like, not coached by someone who is in the Stone Age still. So I think they'll be fine. Look, I understand it, but I think the Giants have a chance to get two immediate high-end impact defensive players. Like, they could end up with Styles and Downs. Like, they could legitimately end up with both of them, Will. Like, that's not insane with where they're picking, that they could end up with both of those guys. And that would take that defense into a scenario where it's like, all right, well, we got to take that defense a little bit seriously now, even without Lauren. By the way, can I just throw something out there real quick, Will? The Giant fans that are upset by the Dexter Lawrence trade, get a grip. Get a grip. Like, you got the 10th overall pick for a guy who didn't want to be in blue anymore, is probably about to go into the backside of his career, and you would have to completely overpay having interior lineman is good, but it's not an essential. Like, so I thought that I was floored when I saw that. Floored that the Bengals gave up a top 10, gave up the 10th overall pick for Dexter Lawrence. I thought that was a freaking home run for the Giants.
Yeah, and I was thinking, like, maybe Love could slip past five, and then once, you always have a guy that falls more than you expect, and usually have a guy that goes a lot higher than expected, Penix from a couple years ago. So I was thinking, if Love ever got past five and the slide starts, does a team like the Rams or the Eagles say, you know what, we don't need that much, we're a player away. If you're the Eagles, we won it all with Barkley a couple years ago. Let's just go for it. Let's go for Love. And Ram, you know, the Rams or Eagles getting Love would be fun, and they have astronomical odds. Eagles are like 70-1, but it appears based on the market, like, that's not going to happen.
I would be floored if he gets past Washington. I just, like, at seven, like, again, I don't love picking running backs in the top 10, but you know, the interesting thing with the Commanders, much better offseason after last year's dumpster fire of an offseason. You could argue if Daniels is healthy, they are just a few offensive pieces away again. So I don't hate it for them at seven. The Kansas City moving from 9-3 to take Love doesn't make any sense for me. You just signed Kenneth Walker. Like, I don't know why you would do that if you're Kansas City. But I, you know, who's picking six again? It's Cleveland, right?
Yeah.
Like, could someone call Cleveland and try to move up and get in front of Washington for Love? Yeah, sure. And the Rams have ammo. This is the first time the Rams have had ammo in forever. Because they have the Falcons pick right there, not too far behind the top 10.
All right. Anything else draft or can we move on?
We can move on, my friend.
NBA. I think Orlando is live. To me, that the other day did not look like an upset. That did not look like a 1-8. Orlando before the season had a 51.5 over under. Detroit had a 45.5. I know I'm overreacting to a couple games possibly, but man, you just watch that game without knowing anything. Those look like two pretty comparable teams. And plus, Detroit tries to out-muscle you, bully you, beat you up. You can't really beat up Orlando. Orlando's bigger than them. I would not be surprised at all if it's Orlando moving on. Crazy or no?
Magic in five.
Wow.
I think this is more importantly, and I love Cade. I think Cade is an amazing player. But this is roster construction problems for Detroit, where you can be a good regular season team when you have the roster constructed the way they do, because you could be not used to the physicality of that they have during the regular season. And in all honesty, Will, like, you could give up after a quarter, like against Detroit in the regular season, right? Like, you're like, you know what? We don't want to deal with this tonight. And you go out and you lose to them. And the fact that Jalen Duren is your second best player, like, that's, I know he had a great year. I know he's an all-star, but give me a break. Like, come on. And this team was the one seed. And I don't know how this team got the one seed, Will. And look, granted, I've not watched a ton of them this year. But after watching on Sunday, game one, I texted a few people who, like, a few friends of mine who are much better, like, connected NBA-wise. I'm like, how the hell did Detroit get the one seed? They have one high-end player. They have one high-end player. And he's an amazing player. But Orlando, like, Cade at 35 and Detroit was never in that game on Sunday. And there's no real second scorer. And I think JB Bickerstaff is a dope, personally. I think he's a dope. I mean, he was still whining. The last time they played the Knicks in the regular season, he was still whining about the playoff series last year. Like, if that's on your mind, like, where's your focus going to be in a playoff series? And you mentioned it. Orlando was a huge underachiever this regular season. Huge underachiever. Like, the fact that they needed to go to the final play-in game to get in the field. I mean, there were people going into the year that picked Orlando to make the finals this year. Like, Desmond Bain was the final piece they needed. They're going to get over the hump. And it just didn't materialize in the regular season, but they are so physical and they're not bothered by the Detroit physicality. If Orlando wins game two, this series is over and it might not even go back to Detroit. The only way to Detroit, that the way that my prediction goes horribly wrong is the Pistons get the physicality back and really make it hard for Banchero, who is a little bit overrated at this point, Will. But I think Orlando wins the series, and I think they win the series pretty quickly. And that is a gift for Cleveland, who seems to be getting every single break possible, Will, where Atlanta loses on the last day of the regular season, so Cleveland gets a significantly easier matchup in Toronto in the 4-5. And the fact that they're on the opposite side of the Knicks, the Hawks, and the Celtics, and I like them to beat Detroit anyway, and I like them against Orlando, like, I just wonder if it's not worth taking a piece of Cleveland to win the East now before those numbers really shorten up and get not worth taking anymore.
The one I like, I think they would be live against Cleveland. To me, Orlando at 45-1 to win the East, because I think they could beat Cleveland, and then you get to a conference finals and you don't even have to win that. You just kind of name your profit.
Hedge it off, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that's crazy. I don't think that's crazy at all.
I think Cleveland would beat them. I think Cleveland would beat them.
What's that series price look? I mean, obviously we're getting way ahead of ourselves. What does that series price look like, though?
Well, what did Detroit close as series price wise against the Magic? I don't remember, Will, because I didn't even entertain that pre-series.
Detroit was -4 or so, give or take, I want to say.
All right,
maybe
so
a little up, maybe a little higher.
Cleveland, even though I think Cleveland is actually a better playoff team than Detroit, they'd probably be $3, especially if Orlando pulls off the upset, right? Like, probably be minus 325 at the peak would be my guess. Maybe.
Yeah, seems high, though. Seems a little high, but you might be right. Who's in more trouble? I'll give you both of them. Knicks 1-1 with Atlanta. Timberwolves 1-1 with Minnesota. Are they both in trouble? Neither? What are your takes on the 2-1-1 series? We got a little juice with it Monday night. We're recording this before the game's on Tuesday, but we got a little juice added Monday with the results.
All right, let's start with Denver and Minnesota first. I have no idea what to make of that crumble by Denver, just because we saw the series 2 years ago, right? And even though Minnesota had a better record, like was a 3 in that year, I would argue Minnesota's better now than they were 2 years ago. But the Nuggets have the best player in the league. And even though Jamal Murray had some really bad shot selection at the end of the game last night, you still have a championship caliber and a championship winner, number two option. And I like Adelman. So, like, that series, I thought Denver was going 7 anyway. I don't have any change in that. Like, I still think the Nuggets win in 7. If Minnesota won, I wouldn't be shocked. Those teams just beat the crap out of each other. And the biggest winner of that series is San Antonio, who, if game one was any sign, Portland has no chance in that series. So San Antonio is going to be there winning in 4 or 5 and just waiting for those two teams to beat the crap out of each other for 7 games. So San Antonio is the big winner for that one. Will, I actually liked the Hawks before the series against the Knicks. I just didn't have the cojones to actually bet Atlanta to win the series. That was a horrible job by Mike Brown last night. That was a horrible job by Mike Brown.
Oh, terrible.
That was on him. That was on him. That's the only way you can lose that game, the way it played out, was if you have a coaching disaster class, and they did. And I don't know why it's the playoffs. You can't have Brunson and Towns off the court at the same time. You just can't. And look, Knicks fans wanted Tibbs out after last year, and the leadership listened. And at the time, I thought, you know what? I don't mind it, because there is an argument always with Tibbs, right? Like, he has a ceiling. He has a ceiling. And it's very possible that the Knicks hit that ceiling in the Eastern Conference Finals last year. But it's going to be very hard to find someone better than Tom Thibodeau. And Mike Brown's not better than Tom Thibodeau. And if they lose, well, here's the deal with the Knicks, too. If the Knicks lose before the Eastern Conference Finals, this season's a failure. Like, this season's a failure if they lose before the East Final. And quite frankly, with the way that the bracket shaped up, I would be furious if I were a Knicks fan if they get to the East Final and lose to Cleveland or Detroit or whoever the hell comes out of the top, right? Like, you're either going to be playing a Detroit team that the Knicks are better than, Cleveland, who I think those teams are even, and you'd have home court, or you'd be playing an 8 seed. Like, if you get there, you have to win it. So I would say, to answer your original question, I think the Knicks are in significantly more trouble than Denver is. Mostly because the way the Knicks lost last night was worse than the way Denver lost. And I expected Minnesota-Denver to be a war. And even though I actually did like the Hawks in this series, after game one, and it's funny, at around the halftime yesterday, I sent a text to a friend of mine and said, I'm very impressed with how the Knicks look so far in this series. They haven't had much trouble with a team that I thought was going to give them a ton of problems, and then that happens. So I would say, to answer your original question, I think the Knicks are in significantly more trouble than Denver, even though it's very possible the Knicks win their series and Denver doesn't.
All right. By the time people listen to this, the Mets will be on a 1-game winning streak or a 12-game losing streak. I think the former. I think they're winning Tuesday night, but I guess we'll find out by the time people listen to this. They will know one way or another. This season is salvageable. It's not salvageable. Who's to blame? If they consulted you and said, you know what, Jeff, we need some help. Where did we go wrong? How do we fix this? What's your take here on this disastrous run year for the Mets?
This is really hard for me, Will, because it's... They're playing poorly, and I also think they've been a little bit unlucky also. Like, They probably this should have really been, and this will sound ridiculous, this probably should have been 3-8 or 4-7 instead of 0-11. And obviously 3-8 or 4-7 is horrible also. But I don't think it should have been this bad. The offense, really the biggest culprit is David Stearns. I don't think there's any argument on that, that who the biggest culprit for what's gone wrong here. He let Pete Alonso walk. He traded Brandon Nimmo for a guy who everybody knew has no offensive ability anymore. And the plan to replace them, and I think, and I don't want this to come off as a shot to Carson Benge, who I think is going to be a really good player, Will. He's just not ready yet. And you have a disaster class at first base where Beatty's been arguably the worst position player in baseball so far this year. Polanco's hurt. And Vientos had one good week. So, oh, and then also your big ticket batting option this offseason, Bichette's been awful. So basically everything that he did to replace those guys hasn't worked. And look, I didn't mind him not bringing Pete back for that money and that length. I get it. If you don't think Pete's a winning player because of his defense, because he's a guy who's going to age horribly, okay, I get it. Would I have brought Pete back? Yeah, I probably would have. The Nimmo trade at the time, I thought, okay, training Nimmo is fine. If you wanted to just totally redo it, that's fine. But you have to do better to Marcus Semien. And that's definitely played out to be the case. Look, the pitching, like, I think Freddie Peralta's been more than fine. Like, the games they've lost with him mostly have been because the bullpen's blown up behind him. David Peterson's not a starter anymore. And that, honestly, him piggybacking, I kind of like David Peterson out of the bullpen. Like, that kind of showed on Sunday, too, right? He pitched well behind Myers on Sunday. I don't know what you do with Kodai Senga moving forward. He completely lost. Christian Scott is starting on Wednesday now, or Thursday. I forget which day. Excited to see him back. But the culprit is Stearns. Like, I actually kind of feel a little bad for Mendoza, who I think a lot of the fan base is putting this on him. And yeah, pitching to Horner was stupid on Sunday. His rationale was completely idiotic. But I don't think this, like, I didn't even think when the world was ending for the Mets last year that I didn't even blame Mendy that much. I thought David Stearns did a horrible job at the trade deadline last year. He didn't do enough. And he gave up too much to get the little he got back. So I think this is all on Stearns. If they wanted to fire Mendy and give Beltran the job, fine. If you want to do that, like, I don't think it would hurt. But I think when this is all said and done, if the Mets miss the playoffs, and Will, the one saving grace with all of this is that this disaster has occurred in April. That is the one saving grace of this. This team 2 years ago had the second worst record in the National League on Memorial Day and got to game six against the Dodgers in the NLCS 2 years ago. Last year, they had the best record in baseball on June 20th and missed the playoffs. So there is a lot of baseball to be played. And they're also in a, I also think, if you're going to say salvageable, and I think it's somewhere in between, I think it's not fully salvageable. I don't think they're done, but the National League is pretty freaking weak after the Dodgers and the Braves. Like, all those teams in the NL Central are over 500, and I don't think a single one of them is any good. And I know the Cubs just swept the Mets, but that, to me, had more to do with the Mets than it had to do with the Cubs. I don't buy the Pirates long-term. The Reds are a complete lockbox right now. They just keep winning one-run games. They're completely lucky. They're not quite Milwaukee of last year, but they're pretty darn close. The Cardinals will fall off. They're just not good enough, even though they are off to a good start. And the Brewers are probably going to win somewhere between 85 and 90 games because that's what Milwaukee does. So, and in the NL West, the Dodgers, and I guess the Padres are legitimately good, but the other three teams out there aren't any good. So you have two playoff spots where you're competing against a lot of mediocrity. Oh, and by the way, also the thing that sucked for the Mets too with this, the Phillies have been awful. The Phillies have truly been awful. And no one, and I correctly so, because the Mets have been a level of ineptitude that's really, really, really bad these last 11 games. But the Phillies suck also right now. And you have two teams that were supposed to be high-end playoff teams that, look, I don't know if the Phillies are salvageable. I really don't, Will, because they look old. And it's hit everybody. And I know they're getting Wheeler back this weekend or this week, but I would be really worried about them too. And look, when it's all said and done, do I think the Mets make the playoffs? No, I don't think they're good enough, unless if Stearns makes some big moves during the year. But is it impossible for them to get a wild card? No, because the NL, and honestly, this goes for the American League too, for where you have Houston, who's way under 500 right now. Like, there are two high-end teams in baseball right now. Two. And they're the Dodgers and the Braves. And that's it. I think everybody else is for the taking at this point, Will.
Jeff, appreciate it, man. We got to run, but this was good. I'm sure we'll be on again shortly here to recap everything. So fun time of the year. At Jeff Parles on Twitter, ESPN Las Vegas. Where else can we find you?
Those are the two places. I will tell you, though, Will, if any of the listenership happens to be in Vegas, Thursday, 3 to 6 Pacific time, draft night, as we know, on Cofield & Company, me and Steve Cofield will be live at the Palms at the Sportsbook. So if you're out in Vegas, want to say hello, we'll be there.
Signing autographs?
Palms. You know, Will, I've made this joke too many times and it's not funny anymore. I feel like if I signed something, it would devalue whatever I signed. So I don't know about that. So, but yeah, no, we'll definitely have t-shirts on there. That I can tell you, Will. We'll definitely have t-shirts.
Everybody loves a free t-shirt. Nobody's too good for a free t-shirt. Jeff, 100%. Appreciate it, man.
Thank you, Will.
All right, rate, review, subscribe. Thank you to Jeff Parles. Thank you guys for listening. See a few more reviews coming in on Apple. Appreciate those. Again, we're doing a contest here in the next couple of weeks. If I'll remember here at some point to post something, but appreciate those. Keep them coming in. Enjoy the draft. See ya Friday.